Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Chris Herring of ESPN and 538, and Chris wrote an article recently. The headline is, Colin Sexton is no longer historically bad. He may even be good. Chris, we're going to blame you, Chris, or we're just going to blame all analytics people.
Chris doesn't deserve any blame. Come on.
I'm kidding. We were crushing Colin Sexton earlier in the season because he was so bad, you know.
But to be fair, he was bad.
He deserved it. I'm kidding about blaming Chris. But he has really turned it around and is playing much better, right, Chris?
Oh, I mean, without question, he's been better for the last month, you know, maybe even month and a half or so. But I think the challenge here is that the things that made him bad early on, you know, I think there are a couple obvious things that have improved, but some of it is not stuff you can just kind of wish away with a wand or something like that. It's going to take probably years. And I think what we've probably seen most clearly with Colin, even when he plays well, that he still may be more of a shooting guard than a point guard. And you know, I know we're in a positionless, more of a positionless NBA than we've ever had, but there are certain elements of his game that come across so strongly as a rookie that make me think that unless he develops a lot, that you may still want to pair him with someone that has skills that are more of a lead guard as opposed to kind of what he is, which he's an incredible shooter, and I think that's the best part of his game so far. But I think they might kind of speak more to him being an off guard as opposed to a lead ball handler.
Chris, you know what's so funny about that? You just called him an incredible shooter, and the knock on him coming out of Alabama was that he did not shoot the ball well. He gets to Cleveland, does not shoot the ball well early in his early rookie season, and now is shooting three-pointers lights out. How did it happen? Like, it seemed like it happened overnight.
Well, you know, what's interesting about it is, you know, the knock on shooting with college players, and I've heard this for a long time, you know, I work at a site that promotes the idea of data analysis and heavy data analysis. I don't consider myself to be a great math person. But what I've heard for years with, you know, analyzing college players is that it makes more sense to look at their free throw percentage than it does their three-point percentage early on when you're trying to kind of guesstimate whether someone will turn out to be a good shooter at the next level. Hmm. Colin shot the ball pretty well from the free throw line. He's, you know, a little short of 80%, but above average for a college shooter. He was below average, at least the way we would think of it from a college standpoint, about 33 or 34% at the college level. But when you think about the way he would have been defended at the college level, and, you know, I've mentioned this in the story and think back to that crazy game he played against Minnesota as a college player where, you know, all of Alabama's players got ejected basically for coming off the bench during a skirmish. And so because of that, they had to play 4-on-5, and then one person got hurt, and so it turned into 3-on-5. And Colin was facing, you know, double and triple teams on half those plays during the last 11 minutes of that game. Colin was always being heavily defended because he was a star at the college level, and so his three-point percentage may not really speak to the way he would be defended at the pro level, given that, you know, he's playing with Kevin Love and Chetty Osman and stuff like that. So you think about that stuff and you have to kind of contextualize it differently at the pro level. But obviously, you know, he was never really shooting it that poorly to begin with. He didn't start well, but he wasn't horrible. And really that was the only thing kind of keeping him afloat was the idea that he was hitting jumpers. You know, and the fact that he hasn't shot so well over the last 2 months to where it would make up for the beginning of the season. But, I mean, he's still going to finish the year above 40% from three. So he can clearly shoot. But the other stuff, like we said, you know, the playmaking and clearly the defense, which, you know, the Cavs are going to finish with one of the worst defenses, if not the worst defense we've ever seen in modern history. That's where the real areas of improvement are going to be for him, and how I think you have to take some real time to consider how you're going to try to build around a player with his skill set.
We're talking with Chris Herring from ESPN 538. Chris, you know, to that point, obviously the Cavs are hoping to get Zion Williamson, but if they end up with the second pick, we've talked about it. Ja Morant's obviously a point guard, and you just said it. You don't look at Colin Sexton as a point guard, neither do we. If you're picking second, I mean, ultimately you're going to take the best player, but do you think they would take Ja Morant and clearly move Colin Sexton to the two guard? I mean, it's a little positionless anyway now, the NBA, but what do you think about that?
No, I think you could. I mean, I think that, you know, there's enough of a base out there to kind of look at smaller two-guard lineups that work, particularly when those guys can really shoot. And I think probably the best example that a lot of people think about is Portland. And so with Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, a team that, you know, has been a perennial playoff team at this point. And, you know, one player that's kind of like an all-NBA level point guard, and the other who, you know, is kind of like a borderline all-star sort of player who can move without the ball. And, you know, Lillard is kind of more of a setup man. McCollum's really not as much of that. But I think it's doable, and those two guys aren't known for their defense at all. You have to have a team that is built really, really well around those two players for it to work. And so, you know, I think Kevin Love's defensive shortcomings, you know, I think he's improved. And, you know, obviously you have stretches where he defends well, but it's not really what he's known for. He's also probably not going to be the face of that franchise 4 or 5 years out anymore. And so, you know, just finding players that are 3-and-D players that can move without the ball and, you know, are kind of lunch pail sort of players. So really, even with, you know, from a Cleveland standpoint, if you think about like Iman Shumpert type of players, so obviously he didn't fill that role perfectly there at all, and you couldn't find them at $10 million. You wouldn't want to find them at $10 million price ranges, but guys that can kind of fill the other needs that you're going to have, because at that point you would have now two scorers. You know, Morant is very talented as a passer, but they would be very undersized for today's NBA. I wrote a story months ago pointing out that now the height differential between centers and point guards in the NBA today is smaller than it's ever been, which gives teams more ability to switch and kind of defend multiple positions with one or two players. Cleveland would not be kind of on the cutting edge of that. They'd be on the opposite end of that. So you could do it. Offensively, it would give you a lot of potential, but it would really set you up for failure defensively unless you get players that can play around those two.
Chris, my partner mentioned, you know, obviously we're hoping to get Zion Williamson from Duke. Don't know if that's going to happen, but let's say it does happen. How would Zion fit with this squad? And like, we feel like he's a generational talent and could be a player that, hey, who knows? With him and obviously Colin Sexton and some of these other players, maybe the Cavs could actually be like a contender, not to win anything, but like, go from like being one of the worst teams in the league to be maybe being a playoff team with Zion.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm very interested to see kind of where he ends up and how he fits with whoever he goes to, because I think Cleveland, you know, I think we're still figuring out exactly where he's going to be positionally. I've seen some people arguing that they think he could step in and play center, and I feel a little I don't know that I see that just yet. I mean, he's got the athleticism to kind of do anything. You know, Duke has not tapped into his potential whatsoever as a ball handler in pick and rolls, but he's been very efficient with that. You know, he'd probably fall somewhere between kind of a 3 and a 4, which, depending on the lineups that Cleveland runs out there, Love plays the 4, you've got Tristan at the 5. And, you know, I think there would be enough flexibility with Zion's game to where you would just, you know, you would bite the bullet that comes with the idea of playing Kevin Love at 5 and playing center at times. Even if it hurts you defensively, Zion can kind of, you know, he's got the versatility to guard players that are threes. You know, he obviously has enough muscle to guard people that are fours in the post. And so I think he can do a lot of that stuff on defense. Offensively, I think we're, like I said, I think we're just beginning to see what all he can do. He's a decent enough shooter to where, you know, if you leave him wide open, he's not afraid to pull the trigger. If you defend him up close, he's quick enough and has enough ball handling skill to dribble past people. So, I mean, I think he's a good enough player, and he's a good enough, I wouldn't even say a gamble. You know, even if you have someone decent at his position already, I mean, the fact that he could potentially be a superstar someday, I think you have to be willing to put other players aside. So if it's Osman, obviously, but Even if it's Kevin Love, you've got to be open to letting him figure out what position is best for Zion. And, you know, and maybe you can kind of speed up your process by finding a taker for Kevin Love if Zion turns out to be as good as advertised, and try to get more players that kind of fall in line with the age range of these guys that you've got on your roster.
Chris, last thing, I'm curious your thoughts on this. You know, I think analytics has been so great for sports. I love these you know, baseball. ESPN did like an analytics-based broadcast of the NL Wild Card last year. I loved it. I love all of it. The the only flaw I see is in the NBA, it seems like analytics can't account for, and it seems like this really only happens in the NBA, teams that are kind of taking the foot off the gas in the regular season. For example, the Warriors now, or I remember, I think it was 2017, consistently all the analytics-based models had the Celtics overwhelmingly beating the Cavs in the playoffs, and we were all like, this doesn't make any sense. The Cavs are much better and beat them. Is that a true flaw, or am I making a mountain out of a molehill? Is that the one flaw?
I think it's probably – I would say there are probably two. One is defense. I think that basketball still really struggles to contextualize how impactful one player is in a positive way or in a negative sense, and I think that's one of the things we're talking about with Colin now.
Okay, yeah, right.
Although I do think that you can look at the fact that I think they get 7 or 8 points worse defensively per 100 possessions when he's on the floor, and I think that that's pretty telling. But so I'd say that. But then I would say, yeah, that obviously how much teams are focusing or really emphasizing the end of the season, particularly now in kind of a rest-infused NBA where teams would prefer to just rest their players and leave them healthy as opposed to pushing, you know, kind of cracking the whip the way you would with a horse or something like that. So I know at 538, and like I said, I'm not really a math specialist at all, so I don't have any dealings with the back end of it. But I know we recalibrated our projection model to try to account for the fact that, you know, obviously teams go into the postseason a lot of times kind of in a slump, partly because of the fact that they're not playing their best players. So what we've done is we've kind of created a two-tiered system where we have one that is just a straight model that kind of gives a team credit for every win that they get and how much they win by and who they've beaten specifically, and doesn't look at anything else really. And so last year, because of that, the Sixers were like, you know, like kind of they basically were giving them better odds to win the championship than the Warriors, which obviously was out of whack. And
right,
so we got
right.
a lot of criticism for that. But what we did after last season was created a system too that allows you to basically look at how much a team is playing at full strength. And so if they're sitting players regularly or if someone's injured, it takes that into account. And it basically tells you, it kind of almost alerts you to the fact that this team either isn't at full strength or isn't playing at full strength because they're choosing to. And so kind of take that with a grain of salt. But if they were at full strength, this is where we would project them to be. And by using that system, all of a sudden the Warriors kind of have, you know, triple the probability of anybody else of winning the title. And I think that's more in line with what you would expect
right.
and what makes more sense. And I think that would have been a better, more accurate model for a team like the Cavs. Really, any of LeBron's teams for the last 8 years, I think it would have been more accurate that way.
Fascinating stuff. Chris, we appreciate the time. Thanks for the good work. We'll talk to you again soon.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Chris.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.